underway on a Friday edition of the Football Hour. Welcome to our Sportsnet 960 downtown studios. If you're with us live on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, and sportsnet.ca/960, or we're available on demand for your 1 hour of football talk every day here at sportsnet.ca/960. For the time being, we're under the Sportsnet Today banner. Still waiting for a show name. You know what? Maybe we'll never get a. Maybe we don't get a show name. I don't know where you got that impression from. I really don't. He's Matty Rose. I'm Pat Steinberg. Hopefully your Friday is going along nicely. And week three of the CFL season is officially underway. It started with a really ugly game. That was not a fun football game in any way, shape, or form.
We had like eight good
ones. Unless you like watching the Riders lose, in which case I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, man. Like, we've been subjected to some pretty good football through the first 2 weeks of the season, but I don't know, that one, you start off behind the eight ball, right? You allow the touchdown on the opening kickoff, and then things just seem to snowball from there in a not good way if you're the Rough Riders.
Yeah, that Shaq Evans play in CFL Fantasy, that didn't work out so well for me.
Oof.
Yeah, you know, the one catch on three targets for 12 yards.
Oh!
Woo!
Swinging a miss, Patrick.
Yeah, that didn't go so well. Duke, had you put Duke Williams in, he actually had himself a really solid game. Caught four passes for 101, including a touchdown on a 45-yarder. So that was a solid, solid outing. If you put Jamal Morrow in, womp-womp, you got lucky because you didn't have him in, right?
Correct.
Jamal Morrow just 14 yards on the ground on four carries. Cody Fajardo really struggled. No touchdowns and two picks. Give Trevor Harris credit, a great start to that game, and then managed it from there. He immediately had a 7-0 lead to work with after, as you mentioned, first play of the game, ran back for a touchdown. He had the one touchdown pass that ended up being a 70-yarder. So, you know, Trevor Harris, good start, then managed it from there at quarterback. They didn't have Vernon Adams with them because he was out for COVID reasons. So give Montreal credit. They pick up their first win of the season, and they were due. When you take a look at how they lost to the Stampeders and they lost to the Argos, each on last-minute plays and each in situations where they could have very easily won, I give the Owls a lot of credit. They go back home and they take it to the Riders. Sask had some problems, and there were people who were saying, yeah, maybe don't bite too hard on Sask. Now they're 2-1, and the Alouettes are 1-2.
Yeah, and there were some interesting things that came out of that game. I thought Trevor Harris completely exceeded my expectations. He was very good, able to maneuver the pocket well, and I thought he was finding his receivers quite well, too. You know, any time that you can get Eugene Lewis involved for 4 or 5 and 68, that's a good day for you. Tyson Philpott makes his first CFL grab, I want to say, for 68 yards. His first huge CFL grab, for sure, with his brother going to make his debut Saturday for the Calgary Stampeders. Yeah, that's a tough one if you're Saskatchewan. Like, there were stretches of their first two games where they didn't look great, but they were still able to salvage victories, similar to what we've seen from the Calgary Stampeders through 2 weeks. And then this is a tough one, to go into a road barn and, you know, they wanted to win after going 0-2 and kind of understanding that with this new owner, you want to make sure that things are solid, right? You don't want to be in the doghouse with him early on because he seems like a guy and he's made it apparent that, you know, he's willing to make some changes if things don't go great. But for them to get that first win, that's a big one for Montreal.
On Friday night, Winnipeg at home to Hamilton, 6:30. That is a Grey Cup rematch. These two teams have met in the last two Grey Cup games, with Winnipeg winning both. Of course, they won the last one in overtime, and the first one they won very handily. This line remains at 5.5. Bombers favored by 5.5. That's where things sit right now. I like Winnipeg in this game. I have not been overly enamored with everything I've seen from Hamilton. And the Ticats on the road at IG Field, this is a tough situation for them. I like Winnipeg, as we talked about. It was 5.5 when we did our picks on Wednesday. It remains 5.5 on this Friday. And I think Winnipeg's got a good chance of moving to 3-0 here.
Yeah, I really do see that as well. My thought process hasn't changed, even with the point spread there. I do feel like Winnipeg is a team that to be 2-0 after winning two championships, that's just gravy at that point for them. Like they you go 0-2, who really cares? You've hung two banners and you've still returned a lot of that team and expect that you can kind of turn things around. Mm-hmm. But now you've got a situation where Dane Evans has looked up and down. Like he's been able to put up big yards, but he's also thrown turnovers at costly moments that have really ended up costing that team victories. I still lean the Bombers here. I'm still leaning the Bombers minus the points.
Quickly, before we get to the Stampeders report, and there's a lot to dive into. I did not like my Shaq Evans play. That was the only guy I had going on Thursday night in CFL Fantasy. He suffered an ankle injury early, only caught the one pass. Didn't work out really well. I'm having a lot of trouble setting my lineup. We're going to get to quarterback news in just a second, but give us a little bit of a teaser because we were talking on Thursday's show, Bo Levi Mitchell versus Jake Mayer. What's the way to go if you're looking Stampeders quarterbacks? How are we feeling in that respect?
I've switched back from Jake Mayer to Bo Levi Mitchell. It was something that we had talked about on Thursday's show with Bo not doing a ton with the first unit in their final day of practice. Of course, we got our depth charts today. He's listed as questionable, a game time decision situation for Bo Levi Mitchell. I still do think this is a situation where he ends up playing, but I've created a couple of audible situations. So what I've done is I've swapped out Jake Mayer for Bo Levi Mitchell, adding on the extra $1,700-ish. And as a result of that change, I've also taken out Peyton Logan and James Wilder Jr. from my roster and going with Kadeem Carey as my lead back and just going with one running back. Now, the idea here being that as soon as we have a clear idea on Bo Levi Mitchell, if he is starting, I'll stick with it. And if he isn't able to go, I can make a quick audible, go to Peyton Logan while keeping two running backs instead of one, then going with Peyton Logan and James Wilder Jr.
And as you mentioned, like Bo Levi is listed on top of the depth chart, but with a big red GTD beside him. That alarm bells for fantasy all over the place.
Yes, sir.
So I'm really curious if they, and you made the point on Thursday's show about maybe you go, maybe even if Bo gets the start, maybe you take the risk and put Jake Mayer in a quarterback anyway, because maybe Bo's not 100%. Maybe he's not effective. I've got a lot to consider.
Maybe he's one hit away from being out.
And I don't want to see that.
When it would usually be two, right? It's that type of thing. But, these are hard things to deal with. And we'll get to it in the Stamps report. But this doesn't feel like something that you give him 2 weeks off and he's going to be fine.
I like that they've got Hakan Avadu back. I like that he still remains in that starting position for the Canadian slot. I like that a lot, and I'm really, really interested in Hakan Avadu on my roster for week three.
I think the team really likes the size there. He's one of their biggest targets,
it's
without a doubt.
Great end zone option. He may not get you a ton of yards, but a really good end zone option. And at $3,300, I quite like that as a potential flex play if you're playing fantasy.
He is on my roster. I've already got him on there. He's been someone that I've had all week long. It's a large secondary for the Edmonton Elks. That's something that Dave Dickinson has mentioned a couple times this week, and I do wonder if we do see a little bit more of a emphasis on some of the bigger receivers for the Stampeders. It's why I've opted to go with Kamar Jordan rather than Reggie Bagleton this week.
Yeah, Kamar seems like a really good play if you're looking for another receiver.
And he costs less than Reggie as well. Ideally, I'd like to have them both, but you just can't have... Cake need it too, Pat.
Running backs that I like. Kadeem Carey at $8,500. That's a little rich for my blood at running back, but if you're looking for a good lead back, him or Butler are the two that I'd be looking most towards. Andrew Harris at almost $11,000 is too much. And then if you're looking for kind of the mid-range running backs, I do like both Thomas Erlington and James Wilder. So Sean Thomas Erlington and Hamilton, James Wilder and Edmonton, I both think are really solid plays if you're looking for maybe more of a middle-of-the-road priced running back. Maybe see if you can go with two of those, depending on how your salary cap is working. Anyway, Pat and Matt, football hour is underway. Final day of practice on this Friday for the Calgary Stampeders before Saturday's 5 o'clock kickoff against the Edmonton Elks. It is time for our Stamps report. He's Matt Rose.
Yeah, man, it is Friday, so that means depth chart day. Huzzah, huzzah, favorite day of the week. Who's in, who's out? And this week, a new question, Pat. Who might be out? Bo Levi Mitchell listed as questionable as the starting quarterback after he dealt with some soreness in that ankle that was initially hurt back in week one.
A little re-aggravation, but, you know, nothing terrible. You know, I took all the reps day one, day two, took some reps on day three, and again, just kind of felt aggravated again, and you know, kind of like Kadeem in the last game, just didn't want to push it to the point where I couldn't play. So, you know, trying to be smart with it, letting Jake get reps in case whatever happens, but definitely going to make sure that I'm ready for the game.
Are you worried about it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I expect it to get re-irritated. You know, I mean, it's what happens when you play through injuries. You know, those things don't just go away. They kind of, you know, get re-aggravated. But, yeah, frustration always. You know, I don't want to be, you know, I played so long in my career without injuries. I don't want to constantly have to talk about them. But it is a part of the game.
Are you worried that it's going to be recurring throughout the season? Or is there anything you can do to make it better?
I'm really just kind of hoping that with the bye week as well, that I'm able to take, you know, a week off and get off the feet. And that'll kind of really let everything kind of settle down.
It's too bad for Bo, because that means he probably won't get to golf during his bye week. Probably, you would assume. Probably.
Yeah. Planting on the ankle.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Probably. Dave probably wouldn't like that if that was the case.
No, we didn't ask Dave about that, but he did give some thoughts on the quarterback.
A little soreness in that injured area that he had in week one. So I'm hopeful. He came back quite fast after the original injury. So hope it isn't an all year type of thing, though. So that's one of those things we're going to have to monitor tomorrow, and I'm not trying to be coy or anything. It's just if he can go, I'm playing him.
Counter argument would be, if you're worried that it might be a recurring thing and the playing him, why not just go with Jake, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know if this is going to be something to get healed in a week. You know, because you play each week to win, and whether you're not really trying to pace yourselves, you're trying to win. So if he tells me he's good to go, I'm going to play him. I think he's obviously coming off a good game, and he has some momentum in his side. He knows he's gone against Chris Jones' defenses a lot, so that to me would be a positive if we can get him out there.
And it looks like he's going to get, like, the one thing I would say is that you don't notice a discernible limp when Bo Levi Mitchell is making his way around the practice field or just kind of making his way around doing whatever. And when he had the broken fibula, there were points where you were like, there's an obvious limp there. So it's hard to say. It does seem like something that, you know, it's not a broken ankle, pardon me. It sounds like it might be something, you know, maybe soft tissue in that kind of area. But it's one of those things that they can't really just sit him for, you know, as long as they need to. Like, he's going to be in the game plan as long as he can move around the pocket.
Yeah, and I'm really curious, like, because as Dave said, it's not something that necessarily gets taken care of in 1 week of rest. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to start evaluating, and I think Bo always gets the benefit of the doubt, or he gets kind of first rights of refusal when you are a two-time most outstanding player, when you're a franchise player, when there's as much built up goodwill between him and Dave. I think you're always going to lean towards him initially. But I'm really curious, like, okay, at some point, if this is not going to clear itself up as the year goes along, you're now judging Bo at whatever percent, 80% Bo versus Jake Mayer. There's going to have to be some decisions made at some point, potentially, if the injury that he's going to play through ends up starting to show. I'm really curious how this story plays out.
All eyes are going to be on that hoof for Bo Levi Mitchell as they get ready for week three, taking on the Edmonton Elks. Other notes for the offense. Great to see both Kadeem Carey and Peyton Logan available for this game at running back. Carey had a lower body injury that knocked him out of week two on Calgary's second drive of the game. Logan came in. He was very good, but ended up entering concussion protocol after a hard hit early in the fourth quarter. But both are back and ready to get right back into the battle for head coach Dave Dickinson.
I think both are good to go, though. So, I mean, like, I'm not going to not play either one. You know, hopefully mix and match and do some good things. They all, to me, they can protect, run the ball. Those are the things we have to have against Edmonton.
Not surprised. I would have been surprised if neither had been able to go because they didn't sign another running back. And Dedrick Mills, their third running back, is on the six-game injured list with a wrist injury. So they've had two running backs in camp, and when they didn't sign anybody else at the beginning of the week, it kind of was a signal that both would be available, which is great because obviously didn't really see what happened to Carey. It didn't look serious, but obviously he was kept out of the game as kind of a precaution. And then Logan, it looked awful, so outstanding to see that he's kind of been able to come back and feel great throughout the course of the week and be ready for this game.
Oh, that the way that Logan was able to be used against Hamilton in week two, some of the big plays that he busted off,
the little screens that they were getting out to the right.
I think it's a really nice change of pace they've got. So now you've got Kadeem Carey, who's clearly your lead back. He's going to be your workhorse. He's going to get a lot of the first down and second and short, those type of situations. But now all of a sudden you've got a great change of pace, and now you put the defense on their back foot. All of a sudden Logan comes in on a second and long. You're like, okay, well, all of a sudden he's an option that gives whoever the quarterback is a few more options and maybe some open looks over the middle of the field. So I really like, because we didn't see Logan in week one. They went with Carey and Mills. Mills did look good. And Mills looked good too, but Logan comes in after Kadeem goes down early on in week two and looked really good himself. Now to see Carey and Logan for a full game, fingers crossed. I hope that works out as well as it could.
One constant amongst all three running backs, an outstanding offensive line in front of them.
Yes, agreed.
Elsewhere on the offense, Colton Hunchak back on the roster after missing week two with a rib injury. He replaces Tyson Middlemost as the backup slot Canadian receiver. We'll also see the debut of Jalen Philpott, the fifth overall pick in 2022 for Calgary, out of the University of Calgary. The 21-year-old very much looking forward to making his debut.
Feeling really good. This is definitely going to be a check mark off my checklist. Just finally getting that first game and getting my feet wet, but feeling good, feeling super healthy. Just something that I've been focusing on these last couple of weeks, just making sure that my body's feeling really good just so I can go out there and give the team everything I can. And yeah, we're excited to go out there tomorrow.
He's listed as the backup receiver to Richard Sindani on the outside, so might not see a ton of work on the offense. But with Philpott replacing Sean Bain on the roster, an American receiver, Philpott will be asked to help out on special teams as a returner, and it's something that he's done before in his time with the Dinos.
I'm going to be out there kick returning, so I'm just going to do whatever the coaches ask me. I'm in my playbook, so if they have to throw me into any other position or whoever on the field, I'll be ready to go. But I'm just ready to go out there and make some plays and just do whatever I can to help the team win.
Did you return kicks with Dinos?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I've been returning my whole life, so I didn't do it as much in my senior year, but 2019 I did it a lot, so yeah, it's super comfortable for me, and I'm just ready to go out there and make plays. I'm itching at it for sure.
Do you like returning kicks? Is it still like the one job as a non-football player? Yeah. I'm like, that's crazy, man. I don't
want to
do that.
Yeah, no, I do. I used to play running back, so it kind of gives me a throwback to the running back days, reading the holes, reading the blocks, and making one cut and making a guy miss and going to score, so that's definitely on my bucket list tomorrow, is to try to take one of those back to the house and score a touchdown. And yeah, I'm excited.
Man, if you're a Stamps fan, you'd love to see that. He'll be wearing number 85, the same number as his twin brother Tyson, who was a first-round pick of the Alouettes in 2022, made his debut week one in Calgary, and actually also almost scored a touchdown for Montreal against Saskatchewan on Thursday night.
I know if he sees this, he should have scored yesterday, but he's doing really well. That's everything I can ask for of a brother, just to keep motivating me and pushing me to do better, and the plans are to go outwork him tomorrow.
So that'll be one exciting wrinkle for the team. I did mention Sean Bain comes off the roster and actually moved to the practice roster. Despite showing quite well in limited work through weeks one and two, this move more about managing the ratio for Dave Dickinson as he tries to work with that patchwork defense right now as they deal with a bunch of injuries.
Based on the DBs, to try to get an extra DI on the defensive backfield, we're just not quite there. And I just felt like we needed to get another DB in there, and we still feel like, yeah, with Jalen, that helped him as far as getting on because of the return game. And also, still have Malik. We still have Mox. We still have Peyton. So I think we have enough returners, but needed that extra DB body this week.
So nothing against Sean Bain. He's been good. He goes to the practice roster. You hope he doesn't get scooped up by another group in the short time that he's going to be there. And you look to get a victory against the Elks with this particular group.
Yeah, and I mean, As we talked to Marquay McDaniel on Thursday's show, Calgary's receivers coach, I mean, right now there's a lot of options in terms of what they're able to do. And So when you have a guy like Philpott coming in and he can give you a little bit more Canadian options, and I think we're all really excited to see what he can do in his first game after missing the last couple of weeks, and you see what Luther Hakanavanu did last week. I'm really liking the way this receiving group is coming along. And yeah, Bain comes out, and that's a good point you make about going to the PR. But
you don't have like a toe that's hurting, man, or you feel something in your
stomach? We put you on the one game somehow.
Sick? Yeah, something like that.
This gives you, I'm really interested to see how they use Philpott and what type of different options he gives them as they move into the rest of the season here.
We'll shift our view to the defensive side of the ball, and there's been some changes there. Third straight week with a different secondary for Calgary. Star cornerback Trey Roberson on the one-game injured list. He's got a shoulder injury. Deontay Ruffin will move into the boundary cornerback position from the boundary halfback spot. He had been patrolling in weeks 1 and 2. Ruffin's been there all week, and Dave Dickinson was asked about him earlier on Wednesday.
I think he started off very confident. And I think there's a lot being thrown at him. I think he's doing a good job, but there's a lot of room for improvement. He was a ball hawk in camp. I want to see him get his hands on the ball. I want to see him making more plays on the ball. But he has been good on special teams and tackling. But he has to take that next step, no doubt. As a rookie, you want improvement each and every week. I'm looking for him to do that.
Tremaine Washington will get onto the roster. He moves into the boundary halfback position. Washington was signed last week after he was cut by Ottawa after their training camp. He'll make his Stampeders debut.
He kind of is the one that came in that position, and I think he's a good football player. The Edmonton people should know him. He did a good job for them. He's a guy that looks confident out there and competes. That's what I like about him.
On the field side of the ball, Jonathan Moxie will return from a hamstring injury. He's in his usual field cornerback position, and that's a key veteran to have back in the fold with Roberson out for this matchup.
How they're going
to
react. So we missed him last week, no doubt. He can also help us in the return game. He's also got swagger, and he's a guy that loves to compete. And Edmonton's got a great receiving corps, so good to have him back out there.
It'll be Brad Muhammad making his second start at the field halfback position beside Moxie. Titus Wall goes to the Sam linebacker spot. He was there in week 1, but shifted to safety for week 2. That means that Raheem Wilson will be back at safety. I got to talk to him about being in that key spot with a different looking secondary for the third straight week.
We're here with Raheem Wilson now. We're getting set for week 3. You got the Elks coming in. I wanted to ask you, though, it's the third straight week where the secondary is going to have a different look. How does that affect you?
I don't think it affects us much at all. I mean, we're a close group and we're getting closer, you know, as these weeks continue to pass. I think it's a next man up mentality. We're trying to put together the right pieces and we're just trying to see how good we can be each and every week.
Do you like being at safety in these type of situations, being the veteran to kind of be a man who's part of the communication aspect of the defense?
I guess when it comes to the communication, and I do like to, help everybody out, and get everybody lined up and proper assignments, but I like to just be out there. Wherever I can be out there on the secondary is where I want to be.
Tell me about this Elks challenge. You got Darrell Walker, you got Nick Dembski coming in, you got Kenny Lawler, pardon me. Pretty fearsome group of receivers.
Yeah, a good group, great history in the league. We're just coming out prepared, we're going to make sure we do what we can to be in the right position to make plays.
What are some of the challenges of facing an 0-2 team coming into your house here and knowing that it is a rivalry, Elks and Stampeders?
The challenge is looking too far ahead, not respecting your opponent.
And unfortunately, the recorder died, but the answer kept going. Unfortunate.
You're such a disaster.
So Moxie and Washington get added back to the roster. That replaced
your mic cord that doesn't work, recorders are cutting out in the middle of interviews.
Hey. Did you hear the mic cord be any problem there at all?
No.
Pat?
I mean, there's still 3 minutes left in the interview.
I fixed it.
Did you get the mic cord fixed?
Yeah, I fixed
it. Hey, now we just got to get batteries and we're good.
God, this job is so hard.
I know.
Washington, it's not that hard. Moxie and Washington get added to the roster. They replace Trey Roberson and Bailey Devine Scott. Nick Statz also listed as the backup defensive back. Another former Dino. He'll replace Daniel Amako as the backup defensive back. No changes to the linebackers. No changes to the O-line. No changes to the D-line. All the same, Jimmy Smith will remain punting. Cody Grace not ready just yet. Renee Parrott is kicking. That's the latest on the roster. Thoughts on the secondary, though, Pat?
I mean, I'm concerned. I won't lie. With Lawler, with Walker, with Wilder,
Manny Arsenault still there?
you always, like, Manny Arsenault hadn't played in the league for a while. Now, all of a sudden, he's back in the CFL.
Derek Dennis has done the same. He looks pretty good.
Dennis looks really good. I'm a little worried. I won't lie. You take one of the, you know, true upper tier elite echelon defensive backs in the game out of it. I mean, that the Stamps probably wouldn't say this publicly, but I mean, it does change when you don't have Roberson. Your game plan changes. There's just no doubt about it. There's so many things that he can do single-handedly that you take him away from the fold, and it changes coverages, it changes looks, it changes play calls, because you don't have that guy that you know is going to be almost perfect in his lockdown role. So it's a significant loss, but they've played shorthanded in the backfield all season long, and they've been fine, and they've adjusted. And so I do think getting Tremaine in there, he's playing on, I don't want to say he's used to playing the field side, but he goes to the boundary side. But guys like him are very, very versatile. And, you know, I remember talking to Richard Leonard, and he's used to playing one, but he can play a lot of these guys. And when Brent Monson and John Huffnagel and Dave Dickinson target guys for these positions, they target them because they've got the ability to play all over the field. So, and we've seen it with Titus Wall already. We've seen it with Raheem Wilson, who we just talked about. Like, these guys can all play different spots in a CFL secondary. So I'm not worried so much about that. So getting Tremaine in there for a little help on the boundary side will be big. And then getting Moxie back at the field corner is going to be really important too. So I'm worried about it because you're losing a player like Roberson. That's taken one of the two or three best DBs in Canadian football out of the equation. Maybe the best DB in Canadian football out of the equation. But in saying that, I do think that I still think they'll be an effective unit.
Let's just quickly, a couple notes on the Elks before we get to Dave Campbell, the Edmonton Elks color broadcaster, coming up in a few moments here. But they got some great weapons on offense. We know that. You got the former Stamp Nick Arbuckle making his long-awaited return as a starter. He's got Darrell Walker and Kenny Lawler at receiver. With Walker back in the lineup this week, James Wilder Jr. is as strong a running back as you can find. Walker, one of four new starters for Edmonton this week. One of five, actually, pardon me. They've also got Martez Ivey making his 2022 debut at right tackle. On defense, Dion Lacey back at middle linebacker. He missed week two. Christian Rector will make his 2022 debut at defensive end. And Charles Nelson, who's actually a converted receiver, playing safety, making his debut for this season as well. Big rivalry game. Anytime that Chris Jones is bringing a team into McMahon, 5 o'clock start for what's shaping up to be just a lovely day. And we're looking forward to it, Pat. That's our Stamps report. I'm Matt Rose.
Thank you, Matty. Yes, 5 o'clock kickoff, McMahon Stadium on Saturday night for the Elks and Stampeders. Looking forward to it. The football hour is underway. It's available on demand at sportsnet.ca/960 and under the Sportsnet Today banner. Friday edition of the football show rolls on with Matty Rose. My name is Pat Steinberg, coming at you from our Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. Week 3 in the CFL is underway. Continues Friday night with the Bombers and Ticats, and then a doubleheader Saturday. A doubleheader that starts with the Battle of Alberta at McMahon Stadium. Stampeders and Edmonton Elks, 5 o'clock kickoff from McMahon on Saturday night. It's Pat, it's Matt, and happy to welcome in on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, friend of the program, but it's been far too long since we talked to this gentleman. Dave Campbell, the color voice of the Edmonton Elks from 630 Ched in Edmonton, joins us right now. Hello, Mr. Campbell. It's good to hear from you.
It's nice to hear your voice and be on the show again. Yes, it has been far too long, but glad to be back, guys.
Well, your group is 0-2 in Edmonton. It was not a great week one, much more competitive week two. Tell us about the first eight quarters of Elks football in 2022.
Well, the first four quarters were a nightmare. That's all you could basically say it was in BC. On defense, it looked like, honestly, there was just no cohesion, no real idea of what to do on the field. There were so many errors, so many people lined up wrong, so many people just not making the right decisions. And then on offense, I remember their first two drives, it wasn't too bad. They had to settle for a couple field goals. We learned that Kenny Lawler was going to be probably pretty formidable receiver, but it was a bad night. And then you look at the last four quarters, which didn't start very well, I think, on offense or on defense. Defense, they had trouble stopping the run from Jamal Morrow, and they had trouble, just getting to the quarterback. And then it kind of the switch kind of flipped on defense. They able to get Cody Fajardo down four times for sacks, and then able to put him on the turf as well a few other times. And then on offense, you know, Nick Arbuckle, it took him, what was it, about a quarter and a half to complete his first ball, and then had that great touchdown pass to Kenny Lawler, who had an even better reception. But then it was just, you know, I thought as the game got more, as far as the time to kind of be clutch, the when things got tense, when things got a little bit on the edge of the right play has to be made. I didn't think they did that on defense or on offense. So it was better. I think it's the type of game that Chris Jones wants to play in all three phases, but too many errors caused this team to lose again.
So a big step forward, no doubt about it, from week one to week two. I'm just curious because you mentioned Chris Jones, who is back in Edmonton as the head coach once again. And look, we know that when Chris Jones is a head coach on a team, there's different characteristics. There's very particular characteristics of the way a team goes about their business, the way they carry themselves, and the way they play on the field. What have, and you've covered a Chris Jones coached Edmonton team before and saw him lead them to a Grey Cup in very recent memory. But with Chris back, what are the main differences or the characteristics that you have observed since he's been back in Edmonton?
Well, I don't want to say it's a mellower Chris Jones, but it's definitely a Chris Jones that has been, through the ringer, had success in the league, then didn't have success in the league. You know, his first year in Regina wasn't very good with the Riders. Then they had two good years. Then he left again, went to the NFL, came back, and always just seems like a person who wants to, dare I say it, settle. You know, he just wants to build a program. And let's face it, too, where else is Chris Jones going to go at this stage? I mean, he's got nowhere else to go. So, he was sold on the vision of the organization. And, you know, this is before Victor Cui was hired as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he threw his hat into the ring right away when Brock Sunderland and Jamie Elizondo and Chris Presson, the upper management people, were all let go. He threw his hat in the ring right away, and he wanted this. So I see someone on the personnel side that trusts the people that are with him because they're his guys. There's D'Roy Simon, his assistant GM, and everyone that is here is the people that he's worked with for so many years. As far as the play on the field, this is a different team compared to when he took over after the 2013 season. And that was a 4-14 team, but they had a core in the making. They had Michael Riley. They had Adarius Bowman. They had Odell Willis. They had J.C. Sherritt. And they had others as well. Where you look at this team, they don't have a core yet. They have some pieces from that 2015 championship year, and they do have some good quality veterans. But as far as the core, as far as a cohesive unit, they don't have that. So when I look at the roster this week and the depth chart, I mean, it's kind of, you know, Jones has to blender out again, especially on defense.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to find the right mix, and he's going to keep trying to find the right mix. And if it means he's going to, you know, cut three, bring in three, cut two, bring in two, which might drive fans crazy, but that's how Chris Jones operates. He knows this is going to be a tough challenge to rebuild, but he's also not going to stand pat and just let it all happen in front of him. He's going to try and be proactive in making changes and get the right mix in here.
Dave, you mentioned Victor Cui's name. We've talked about Chris Jones. You already used the word nightmare to talk about week one for this season. I can imagine you might have used a similar term for the way things went for the shortened 2021 season. And not trying to get you to dwell on the past, because it's a very much a new beginning and a different Edmonton Elks franchise. But, you know, what has bringing Victor in done? And just, I guess, overall, the new feel surrounding this Elks team. Can you give us a little bit of a feel as to what it's like being around this team this year compared to last year?
Well, at the end of last season, it was as dark as you could get. You know, it was hard to find where the light switch was because it was so bad. You look out into the stands at Commonwealth Stadium and you see just piles of empty seats upon piles of empty seats. And, you know, they're announcing attendances of, 15,000 or 18,000. And, there's like not even half of that there. It's sad. Like, it almost brought a tear to my eye, doing those games. But the organization, surprisingly, in a lot of ways, said we're not going to stand for this anymore. It cost a lot of money to get rid of two of those three people that I mentioned, Jamie Elizondo, Brock Sunderland, who count on the football ops cap now for the next few seasons. Chris Presson doesn't. But they saw that they needed to make a change. And I think last year it just all bottomed out, where they knew as an organization that this erosion started years prior. And they said, all we did was win. We just won and won and won. And the only time we would talk to our fans is, hey, you want to buy more season tickets? Well,
right.
Thank you. We'll talk to you next year. Right. But then they started to lose. And then they started to not enjoy the success that they used to. And the fans, I think, just felt the disconnection between themselves and the organization. And it really bought them out last year. And, COVID didn't help. And, there are other factors, obviously. It wasn't a normal season. But then here comes Victor Cui. And he had interest in the job right away as well. And this is timing. This is where timing worked out really well here, because he was very successful in the sports industry. The one championship MMA, that's his in Singapore. He lived there with his wife for about 20 years. They came back to Edmonton and they said, it's time to come home. They want to come back to Edmonton. And Victor has a relationship in the past with the former president and CEO of the club, Rick Lalisher, worked on the 2001 World Championships in Athletics, has worked with the organization before, sees the passion of the city, sees the passion of the team that he loved growing up and still loves. And there's a danger to that, too, because you can maybe get a little bit blinded by what the issues are because you love your team so much. Not Victor. No. Victor did a great job of talking to many, many people about what the issues are, and he has his own ideas and his own theories, and he's doing this very slowly. And a lot of people talk about what happened in week one in Vancouver, and I was there for the block party. Omar Doman's doing a great job. The block party in front of BC Place on Robson Street was phenomenal. One Republic was good. It's always neat when you don't think you know the band yet. There's like five songs that you've heard, but you couldn't match it up to the band that was playing. And I'm like, oh, I know those songs. That was pretty cool. But Victor Cui is not into what he calls the flash in the pan or the one-offs. We've seen that so many times in Edmonton with Len Rhodes as the president and CEO. We're going to bring in Flo Rida. We're going to bring in Salt and Pepper. We're going to bring in all these bands. And it was like instant gratification. Hey, we have 38,000 this game, but now we're back down to 29, right? So he's going to do this very slowly. He's going to do this methodically. And it's like on field, and I think it'll take longer off field than on field success. This is going to take time. I mean, I think the organization is set for this might be a 5-year kind of process to get this organization where they would like it to be off the field. But Victor has the passion, the love, the connections, obviously the money, there's so many boxes that he checks off at once that it's just phenomenal that this all worked out, because if it was a year before, the year after, if it was 2020, 2022, 2023, this maybe never happens, mm-hmm. right? So it's just, it's phenomenal how the timing worked out, and Victor Cui is doing an excellent job, and he knows this isn't going to be easy. He's got a big, big mountain to climb here, but he's willing to climb.
In conversation with Dave Campbell, he is the color voice of the Edmonton Elks. Edmonton in town for Saturday's game against the Stampeders. It's Pat Steinberg and Matty Rose here on the Football Hour. Matty.
Dave, got to ask you about Nick Arbuckle making his long-awaited return to McMahon Stadium as a member of a team that's not the Stampeders. How has he looked through the first couple weeks?
Yeah, I think, it's okay. So let's go back to week one. Nobody looked good, and even Nick Arbuckle. Last week, bad start. Now, when you have two drops from Caleb Hawley in the first quarter on two catchable balls, that's not on Nick Arbuckle. He was not helped in that situation. But then once he got rolling, I thought he made some nice throws and made some good decisions. But the problem for me with Nick Arbuckle is there were moments in the game, and he was pressured quite a bit, especially from the right side of the offensive line. That's going to affect the quarterback. And I thought there were times in the game, like there was one play near the end zone where he did throw to Caleb Hawley, but he threw it offline and he threw it rushed in a rushed manner. And he felt pressure. I mean, he thought it was around him when it wasn't. So he's got to understand what's around him better. And the turnovers is something he's got to try and wipe out from his game. I mean, he's thrown five, can't really count the last one against Saskatchewan because it was a Hail Mary at the end that was picked off. But, you know, the strip sack by Larry Dean in the fourth quarter, he thought Larry Dean was going to be in a part of the field in pass coverage and didn't account for him at all. And then Larry Dean comes and rushes him, and then it's a turnover. So his anticipation of where the defense is going to be has to be better in key moments. And he's so smart. Like, you look in training camp, and he was the best quarterback out of the four or five or six at one time they had. It wasn't even close. He is very, very smart, and you guys know that very well, having, you know, covered him for 2 years in Calgary. But there are times where I think within the moment of the game, within when the game counts, when it's on the line, and you have to do a better job. I think he has to do a better job of understanding what's around him. So I think decision making in key moments is what he has to do a lot better. But, you know, so far it's been all right, but they need to win, you know. And I know this is a tough process, almost a rebuild, but, you know, we talk about the process a lot, but Chris Jones is watching, you know, and he's not one to sit back when his quarterbacks are not winning and are not helping his team to win. So the pressure's on Nick Arbuckle to help his team win.
Do you think this is a situation where he could be a long-term solution and continue to improve as he gets more comfortable with the offensive line and the receivers and the Chris Jones run offensive system?
I hope they give Nick Arbuckle every opportunity to do what you're saying, Matt. I totally agree with you. I just wonder if Chris Jones will have the patience to do that, you know, because we've heard all offseason that he wanted someone other than Nick Arbuckle. You know, I believe there was interest in Michael Riley if he was going to be available. They wanted Jeremiah Mazzoli, or he wanted Jeremiah Mazzoli, but that was only a one-way desire, basically, because Mazzoli wasn't going to come here. There were reports that, you know, Arbuckle was being shopped and being, you know, Jones was seeking a trade. Didn't happen. I look at what's happening with the Alouettes right now, and I know Vernon Adams didn't play yesterday because he has COVID-19. But he got the quick hook last week.
Yep.
And I think there's more and more talk about, okay, what's going to happen here in a few weeks? You know, is Vernon Adams going to be a trade candidate? Well, there's a team out west, the Edmonton Elks, who are looking for a quarterback, or could be looking for a quarterback. I think that's a quarterback to watch and to see what happens with Vernon Adams. And, you know, does Chris Jones want that type of quarterback? But I hope he gives Nick Arbuckle every opportunity to succeed, because I want it. You know, I don't say I root for a lot of guys, but Nick Arbuckle is someone I do kind of want to root for, because he has worked so hard. He wants it so badly, and he has moved around so darn much. He just wants a home. He just wants a team to believe in him, and he put in the work so much and so hard in the offseason. And maybe for Nick, he's got to realize you can want something too much. So just be yourself. Because I remember watching him in 19, and I remember a game in early August that Edmonton played in Calgary. He was phenomenal. I've seen some other games in that season, and then always 4-3 as a starter. That's the Nick Arbuckle I want to see. And at times I've seen it, and at times I haven't. So he's just got to be Nick Arbuckle. Don't be anybody else.
Yeah, and I know that there's a lot of people in Calgary who have a very similar sentiment, that he's just such an easy guy to cheer for if you are around the team at all, or if you kind of knew him as a fan. That rings true, certainly. Kenny Lawler, delivering as advertised, I would suggest.
Man, I've never seen a receiver. He's got go-go gadget arms. It's just ridiculous. It's his catch radius. You know, and he missed like a week of training camp or something like that because his car was stuck in Montana, and they couldn't get a part for like 3 days, and it took like half an hour to change it. whatever it was, something to do with the oil pressure. Then he comes to camp, and it's like he never, you know, he's like he was there from day one. He looked great. He was the best receiver there. $300,000 is a lot to give a receiver, especially, you know, and that receiver took a risk by not signing a signing bonus. But he is all world. I mean, we saw him play in Winnipeg for two seasons, and honestly, I didn't realize he was this good. You know, he's got the speed, he's got the smarts, he's tough enough, he's got the wingspan, he's got the catch radius. I mean, that catch he made in the end zone, to know where he is near the dead ball line, to get 1 foot down, and to also have the concentration to get those big arms up and get those nice hands and get his two hands on the football and come down with it for a touchdown. It's been incredible. So what the Elks need, though, is they need options around him. Because they don't have enough of that. So if Darrell Walker can come back in tomorrow and help Nick Arbuckle with, you know, being a good second option, that would be huge. Because you have Manny Arsenault. I don't know how he's going to be week to week. I know he works so hard. Mike Jones is the Canadian. And Kyle Oxley, who was their number three quarterback for the first 2 weeks, is going to be their start, the other starting receiver in the slot on the field side. So. There's a lot of experimentation going on in the offense as well, but, you know, Nick Arbuckle needs another option other than Kenny Lawler, even though he is a tremendous option. I mean, leads the league in targets and in catches, but, you know, you don't want to be dependent on one receiver. So hopefully someone else can step up in this offense.
How about the defense? I know that one of the things that I picked up on today is Charles Nelson is a converted wide receiver who's going to be starting at safety. Anything else that we need to really key on about this defense as we get set for the game on Saturday?
You never know. You never know which player has switched positions. Rich Simon is now a corner. You know, he came in as a receiver. But, no, I really want to see how Deion Lacey looks tomorrow. He came in with some hype, and he has a lot of good history with Chris Jones from his time here in Edmonton, the first time around in 14-15. But Lacey came in, was not in very good shape, did not give the effort that they thought, looked old, looked like he was playing out the string a little bit. But now he's going to have a chance to start. He didn't start in week one. He was basically healthy scratch last week. Now he's going to start him in a linebacker. I really want to see what Deion Lacey shows up tomorrow.
Dave, awesome to hear from you, and great to catch up. I'm really excited to see the Elks on Saturday and see what type of steps they took. They took, obviously, massive strides from week one to week two, so I'm really curious to see what week two to week three looks like. And it'll be good for a good little early season Battle of Alberta. Have a good call on Saturday, and thanks for checking in with us today. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, boys. Talk to you soon, okay?
Be well, Dave. Dave Campbell is the color voice of the Edmonton Elks on 630 CHED in Edmonton, and he joins us to wrap things up on the Football Hour. A reminder that kickoff for Saturday's game is 5 o'clock at McMahon Stadium. He's Matty. I'm Pat. That'll do it for your Football Hour. And Dave joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Barcast Hotline. 13-time Consumer Choice Award winner. For takeout or delivery, call 403-248-3344 or dine in at Atlas Pizza 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast.